alone. Anna left me. Mama left me. Now you're leaving too. Lou's heart weakened. Teo, she bent and took his hands. Trust me, all right. I promise I will return as soon as I am able. There's something I have to do. Teo ripped out of her grasp, studying Vex. With him? I'm coming. I followed you this far, didn't I? I can do this. You shouldn't be alone, all right? No one should be alone. Warmth gathered in Lou's eyes, tears on the edge. On the other side of the door, hinges shrieked. The contingent sent to gather Vex for the council. Panic broke through, but Lou knew what to do with panic. She focused on her plan, just her plan, and breathing, just breathing. Out the window, through the garden, over the castle wall, go. Teo, return to my room, Lou ordered. Teo exhaled, the chirp of a scream starting to escape. Lou dove for him, but a pair of arms swept in. Vex lifted Teo and settled him on his hip. We haven't met. I'm Devereaux Bell. Teo gaped, wonderstruck.
I'm Teo Casalis. I'm Teo Casalis.
Now, Teo Casalis, Vex looked back to the window. How good are you at climbing?
The best.
Glad to hear it. It isn't too far, but you think we can make it?
Stop!
Lou grabbed the window. Vex leaned halfway out, Teo clinging to his neck, the two of them peering down the single-story drop.
He isn't coming, she stated.
Teo sulked.
Devereaux Bell wants me to come.
You think we have time to get him back to your room? Vex nodded toward the door. The soldiers were no doubt in the alcove by now. They had seconds, less than that. Teo beamed at her, victorious. Vex didn't give her a chance to argue. He hefted Teo onto his back, the boy's legs looping Vex's waist and his arms around Vex's neck.
Hold on, kid, he said,
straddled the window and jumped. Lou squealed at their descent, but it was only a heartbeat before they hit the grass. Vex looked up at her, grinning.
Coming, Princessa?
Yeah, Princessa, are you coming?
Teo echoed. Behind Lou, someone shouted. The soldiers had found the bodies in the alcove. She jumped out the window after the mad raider and a giggling Teo, making sure they both saw her scowl as she pushed ahead of them into the garden. On their way to the wall, they passed a group of servants harvesting sweet potatoes. Soldiers would question them.
It was Bell, yes. He abducted Miss Andrew and the young Casalis boy?
No, it was Miss Andrew who led the way. Lou burst through the kitchen garden's gate with more force than necessary. The closest exit would be at the stables, one of the first places the guards would look. Or they could climb the wall and descend the rocky, perilous cliff to Lake Regolith and make their way along the coast until they reached a traversable beach. They would have to risk the stables. Lou followed the garden's fence through the compound, straining to hear any sound from the castle. Every minute counted down in her mind, making her desperate. But Vex kept pace with Teo on his back, and in seconds they huddled against the largest barn.
All right.
Lou leaned around the corner, eyeing the space between them and the open gate. There are 5 soldiers, 2 on the parapet of the guardhouse, 3 on the ground. Vex nudged Lou. When she gave him a look, he held out his hand.
Weapon, please.
No.
I said please. No. If we have to fight, I'll need
no.
Vex huffed.
What? You're the only one who's allowed to go around knocking people out?
My life is at risk, Princessa. Let me fight for it.
You lost that privilege the moment you, Lou?
Lou looked at Teo. He stared up at the castle. Then she heard it. The signal bell tolling high and fast.
Shit, she cursed.
Vex and Teo gaped at her with identical expressions of horror. Lou sighed, 1,000 things she wanted to do warring in her mind, but she settled on pointing at Vex.
Follow me. Do exactly what I tell you.
And she walked out from behind the barn. Vex stumbled after her.
What are you doing?
One of the tricks she'd learned during the revolution. If she acted as though she belonged, people overlooked her.
At least a half dozen times she had strolled out of fortified places she'd had no business escaping from. The three soldiers on the ground spoke with a newly arrived soldier, who was no doubt relaying news of Vex's escape. But they would be looking for a single prisoner, not three people, and not with a child. The gate operated on a system of weights and pulleys, mainly an iron chain that attached to a crank at the base of the guardhouse. The crank sat next to the talking soldiers. Lou clamped her fists, thinking. She approached the open gate, walking as though she were a servant leaving after a day's work. Vex hunched behind her, letting his hair hide his face and distinguishing features. Teo clung to him, eyes wide, but all Lou heard from him was a softly whispered song.
"Flow on, my friends, flow on with me,"
the revolution song. 2 paces and they'd be outside the castle.
"Miss Andrew?"
Lou froze. The gate was above them. She batted her hand against the small of her back as she rotated, signaling for Vex to continue on. This wasn't an outcome she had considered if she got caught, but Vex escaped with Teo. "If that happens, drown me now." Lou dredged up a smile as one of the soldiers pulled away from the others. Brandon, the captain of the guard. She cursed again, but noted his position right in front of the gate's crank. Brandon blushed as he registered her irregular clothing.
Miss Andrew, what are...
He looked past her to Vex, slumping down the road with Teo on his back. Before Brandon could piece anything together, Lou pulled the most harmless thing she could out of her satchel. A sack of variegated holly that she had altered into a sound grenade. The white and green leaves were usually ignited to create explosions, but this sack contained holly leaves that Lou had softened by soaking in concentrated sweet peat. A stalk of hemlock within would ignite upon impact, and the variegated holly leaves would rupture in a cacophony. Harmless, but loud.
"Captain,"
Lou said, taking steps backward.
"I am sorry."
Brandon paused in front of the gate's crank. Lou smashed the grenade to the ground. The impact lit the hemlock, releasing first a spark, but it caught the holly, and the whole sack ruptured in one great trembling boom that sent Brandon flailing back. He hit the crank, releasing the gears, and the gate above groaned, creaked, and plummeted into the dusty road with a resounding thunk. But Lou was already on the other side, racing down the road with Vex and Teo. Vex had a feeling he'd have to get used to Lou leaving him in equal states of shock, horror, and, if he was being honest, attraction. The castle bell warred with the shouting guards fighting to reopen the gate. Vex hooted into the air, not breaking stride.
"How did you do that?" he asked. "Variegated holly, right? But it didn't kill him. Damn, Princessa, you're an enigma. You have to explain this to me."
"I do not have to explain anything,"
Lou threw back, winded.
"I will give you the altered variegated holly, but I never promised to explain how I make..."
"That's not what I meant."
The narrow path dumped them onto a larger road. To the right, it led to the castle's main entrance. To the left, New Deeza. Lou guided them to the left, and Vex matched her as she slowed to a walk alongside the traffic of the port. Humidity made everything sticky, but Vex found he didn't mind the heat or the stench of bodies that greeted them from New Deeza. Vex shifted so he could lace his fingers under Teo to create a more comfortable seat for the kid.
"I meant how you know any of this," he continued. "You're the daughter of politicians, but you can escape from a dungeon in less than, what, 10 minutes? Shit, Princessa, you waste that talent listening to council meetings?"
"She didn't waste anything."
Teo leaped to her defense, kicking with enthusiasm. The kid was stronger than he seemed. He sent Vex teetering, his boot sinking into a puddle of oily water on the side of the road.
"She tried hard to help my sister with the magic, didn't you, Lou? Tell him."
Vex watched Lou for clarification. She winced, pivoting to let parcel-burdened maids edge past her through the crowd.
"That doesn't matter."
Lou stopped outside a cobbler with its shutters thrown open to welcome a non-existent breeze. I freed you from the dungeon, Raider. Now it's your turn. How do we find Milo Ibarra before Argrid convinces the Council to start a civil war?
Oh, good. At least there's nothing important riding on this.
Lou didn't laugh. Vex's initial thought was, yeah, how do we find Milo Ibarra?
But hey, he'd take it step by step, like he always did.
The first thing they'd need was transportation out of the port. Even if someone in New Diza would help them, their descriptions would be all over the city in less than an hour. Was the rapid meander docked where he'd left it before he'd gotten arrested?
It was worth a shot.
Vex jostled Teo.
Hang on, kid. It's gonna get rough.
He met Lou's eyes with a smirk.
See if you can keep up.
And he took off, cutting into the crowd, looking back to make sure Lou hadn't lost him. She was on his heels, looking far from pleased. They darted down cobblestone streets, pressing between horse-drawn carriages that crossed bridges over canals. After Vex led them down the fourth road where they'd had to step over a mech raider, half-lucid on Narcodium Creeper, Lou shoved his arm.
Is there a more civilized route we could take?
She demanded, eyes cutting to Teo. Vex shot her an incredulous look.
Sure, let's go an hour out of our way to hit the three pretty boulevards of New Diza. Do you want a tour or do you want to get out of here?
Lou balked, but her irritation deflated.
There are more than three routes that are less...
She stopped, but Vex knew what she meant and let her know with a smirk.
Less raider infested?
This port may be a different place than it was during the war, but that doesn't mean it's nice now.
Lou's annoyance returned.
I am done listening to you insult this island and its governing. It is a nice place now, no matter what you believe. I saw it at its worst, and while it may not yet be at its best, it is far from...
Vex cut a face Nayeli often used to shut him up. Eye rolled back in his head, tongue out as he mimicked how she was talking. Lou shrieked, but he picked up his pace, pushing down another alley. Soon enough, Vex stumbled out onto a pretty promenade that ringed the northern part of New Diza's docks. He gave Lou a look that said,
"Happy now?"
Cafes and shops lined the road, filled with fancy people dining or throwing away gyas on lavish knickknacks. Vex had no use for what Nayeli called the sickeningly expensive area of New Diza. He didn't pause at any of the stores, even when Teo choked him and cried, "Chocolates!" He raced down the tidewall's steps to the docks.
"Here we go."
Vex stopped on a pier that ran from the northernmost military docks all the way to the southernmost merchant docks. Market stalls sat up against the tidewall, vendors peddling magic and other goods brought in by the boats anchored throughout the harbor. At any moment in any port market on the island, vendors and buyers alike did their best to be nonchalant around soldiers. Part instinct from Argrid's years of oppression, part self-preservation due to illegal activity they didn't want coming to light. The people here should have bustled from stall to stall, avoiding eye contact with soldiers while going about their day as perfectly normal citizens, thank you very much. But every soldier on patrol had a wide bubble of space between them and any patrons. Women with bulging sacks of the day's purchases huddled on the side of the road, waiting for two soldiers to pass. And only then did they scurry on their way. A vendor hurled a tarp over his wares to close up shop before a soldier walked by. The castle bell, tolling in the distance, made people flinch and shoot worried eyes at the nearest guards. Lou grabbed Teo's leg to keep from losing them in the press of people. The stench was worse here than higher in the port, with body odor and various food items gone rancid.
"What's here that will help us find General Ibarra?" Lou asked.
Vex nodded at the crowd.
"Anything seems strange to you?"
Lou looked. She frowned.
"Is this a trick? What am I meant to see?"
Vex rolled his eye. Maybe he was imagining things. All this talk of an Argridian plot and a staged abduction had gotten into his head. He shook it off and waved at the vessels on the docks. Most were multi-story paddled steamboats for sailing the deep waters of Lake Regolith. Others were masted ships that had navigated the larger rivers from the Ovidic Ocean.
"Pick one," he said.
Lou balked.
"We're going to steal a boat? One of those boats?"
Her voice rose, but she stopped when she saw him smiling at her.
"You're joking."
"Yes, payback for not giving me a weapon."
Lou's frown darkened, but Vex waved his hands in surrender.
"Seriously, though," he continued, "my boat should be down."
A body slammed into Lou, knocking her so hard that her hand on Teo's leg was the only thing that saved her from getting sucked away into the crowd. Vex had a brief moment of annoyance. "Damn it, don't have time for a pickpocket," before he saw who it was. Nayeli. He smiled. Good. His crew had probably guessed that the castle's bell was because of his escape and had stationed themselves around the docks in hope that he'd show up. Nayeli's voluminous black curls made her eyes look larger and even more terrifying as she pointed at Lou in an unspoken question of, "Need me to kill her?" Vex smirked and shook his head. Lou righted herself and whirled on Nayeli, who wiggled a knife in her hand. Lou patted her holster, felt the missing blade, and snarled. "Oh, these two would be fun together." Vex pouted.
"Why'd she get one of your weapons and I didn't? That doesn't seem fair."
Lou lunged and Nayeli ducked to the side, slipping away with a giggle. Vex opened his mouth to explain, but Lou grabbed his arm and yanked him along in the chase. He went, his laughter drowned out by the hubbub of the crowd. Nayeli wove down the pier, ducking around stall patrons, leaping over parked wagons. Every so often, she glanced back, not to see if she'd escaped, as Lou would think, but to make sure Lou pursued. She'd pause before blind turns, linger if traffic held them up. They were almost to the dock where he'd left the meander when Lou slammed to a halt outside a fish shop. Barrels of thrashing catfish made the air salty and sharp, and the look on Lou's face gave Vex a vivid image of her dunking him in one of those barrels.
"Who is she?"
Lou demanded. She tightened her fingers around Vex's arm.
"Ow, ow, ow!"
He teetered, Teo squealed, and Lou released him.
"Nayeli!"
Vex shouted. Then to Lou,
"She's... well, she's Nayeli."
Explaining her would take too long.
Lou drew in a breath that no doubt would have carried a piercing remark, but Nayeli slipped in, Lou's own blade pressed discreetly to her ribs.
"Shh." Nayeli held a finger to her lips. "It isn't nice to yell."
Lou blinked at her. "Unless you wish for me to break your hand, return my knife." Nayeli presented her with the hilt.
"Are we ready? It's down that dock. Oh, he's so cute!"
She launched herself at Teo, whose face went scarlet.
"Are we ready for what?" Lou asked.
"What do you mean, for what?" Vex echoed. "You freed me in order to use my connections to find that Argridian, didn't you? Well, meet one of my connections."
Lou glanced at Nayeli.
"She's part of your crew."
Vex nodded. He watched as Lou noted the area. Not the dodgiest section of the wharf, but not the nicest, and sure as hell not one claimed by the Mecht Syndicate.
"Your boat is here," she guessed.
For an answer, Vex started down one of the docks. The crowd thinned out the moment they stepped onto the wooden planks, the wood thumping under their boots. They passed at least a half dozen steamboats moored to wooden pillars before Vex cut a quick look at Lou, who stared forward, her face blank.
"How is your boat here?"
she asked too calmly. Vex unwound Teo's arms from his neck and tipped backward, depositing him onto the dock.
"You can walk now, kid. We're almost there."
"We are?"
Teo's excitement was so tangible they could bottle and sell it. Nayeli giggled.
"You love it. Who are you?"
She took his hand and led him on as he told her and shot questions right back at her. The boat's name, its size, its speed. Lou's hand on Vex's arm stopped him from following. Her touch softer than moments ago. That gentleness was more intimidating.
How is your boat here, Vex?
He tried his best to look offended.
I had my own escape in the works, thank you.
You were able to contact your crew, the one you had lost when you pickpocketed me in the market? How did they get to you?
Why would I tell you? What if I need to escape the castle's dungeon again?
Planning to be arrested a second time, are you?
If it serves me.
Lou stepped closer. Vex almost pulled away, then realized this was the closest she'd stood yet. A shiver came from the center of his stomach, spreading out, down his arms. He stayed where he was.
I may not know what game you're playing, but believe me, I will find out, Lou started, her chest brushing his.
Seagulls screeched over the roar of the pier's crowd.
As much as I don't know you, Raider, you don't know me. You have no idea what I'm capable of.
Vex considered.
You're right. I don't know you. But I know who you want to be, Princessa, and that might be more dangerous to you.
Lou's gaze didn't break from his. If anything you do interferes with finding Milo and returning him to the council, I will use that sweet peat concoction on something dear to you. She slid her knee up to the area she meant, a light graze that didn't hurt. Quite the opposite. Vex twitched, creating a spasm in his torso that rocked him forward, bumping into her. An unbroken strand of curse words flitted through his head. He should not be so attracted to someone so set on maiming him. He closed his eye for a second for composure. When he looked at her, he let himself fall away, his humor and cockiness gone.
I won't betray you, he told her.
She held, her eyes flitting over his face, waiting for his earnestness to break. It didn't.
Fine, she said. Now where's your boat?
12. That Vex could go from secretive to sincere in one breath was infuriating. When he crooked his elbow to her and said,
Milady,
Lou gave an unimpressed stare and marched down the dock. Ahead, his crew member Nayeli stood on the deck of a steamboat, her arms out to Teo on the dock. He hesitated and looked back at Lou, briefly losing his adventuring spirit. She smiled, grateful he could get her to, grateful she had someone whose life depended on her, reminding her of what was at stake. But beneath that gratitude, she felt disgust at herself. She was bringing a 6-year-old into untold danger. Few of the things she had done during the war with Argrid had made her feel this soulless. Teo took her hand, and his tight grip pulled her back to herself.
Aboard, Captain Casales, Nayeli said, swaying like the clouds, constant bright motion that Lou suspected could all too easily give to storm.
Her wild black curls accented golden skin and a softly rounded face that said she was a good part Tunkian. Unlike Vex's, her hand was free of a raider brand, which only meant that Argrid's church had never captured her. Lou squeezed Teo's fingers and analyzed Vex's boat. The vessel was small, built for no more than 5 or 6 people. Red cedar had been polished and sealed for the bottom, giving the hull a dark berry color. The floor and interior were planks of teak in varying hues, depending on the state of restoration. The deck held a stack of crates tied to the starboard railing, a hatch, and, tucked up under the smokestack, the pilot house. Within it, Lou could see a wooden helm and a table covered with maps and charts, tidily arranged. Vex stopped beside Lou.
Breathtaking, isn't she?
Lou couldn't keep the shock out of her tone.
This is your boat? And by yours, I mean...
I didn't steal her.
Vex leaped from the dock and landed beside Nayeli. He patted the hull, his pride undeniable.
Welcome to the Rapid Meander, Princessa.
Lou snorted. Nayeli and Vex shared a questioning look before eyeing her, and Lou swallowed the quip she had been about to make. Their love for this boat was clear. Best not to insult them before Vex had fulfilled his end of their arrangement. Lou stepped onto the deck. As she reached back for Teo, her eyes caught something up the pier.
The crowd moved with the normal bustle of midday, but two flickers of intensity peeked through like fish breaking the surface of a lake. The closest one sprinted up the dock, footsteps hammering on the planks.
"Soldiers coming!"
the woman shouted as she ran. She dove aboard, and Lou's presence made the woman teeter, blink, and glare. The wrinkles around her eyes said that her normal expression was a glower, but her height made her intimidating even without any expression. The woman's slight accent cemented the impression that she was from the Mechtlins. She was tall, well-muscled, her hair yellow and her fair skin ruddy in a way that made the white brand on her wrist stand out. The haphazardness of Vex's crew wasn't a surprise. They were unaligned, after all, but it still left Lou in a state of awe. One of the reasons unaligned crews were so rare was that raiders with different heritages seldom got along, let alone well enough to be crewmates. Vex motioned between her and the Mecht woman.
Etta, Lou, and that's Teo.
Introductions complete, the deck unraveled in a flurry of motion.
Nayeli, unmoor the meander. Etta, the furnace have enough fuel for now?
Etta gave him a cutting look that said, "Do you have to ask?"
Excellent. Oh, Princessa, you might want to—
Lou had snatched Teo into her arms the moment Etta had raced down the dock, but at Vex's words, she sat him on the deck.
What do I need to do? Will we make it away from the pier in time?
Etta paused, climbing the pilot house.
The pier! They're coming on steamboats, barricading the harbor.
But Vex connected it first. He pulled out a spyglass and moved to the port side, rocking the meander as he planted his foot on the railing and lifted the glass toward the pier. Lou followed, directing him to the pocket of intensity she had seen in the crowd. After a beat, Vex lowered the spyglass.
What was it you said earlier? Shit?
Who is it?
It seems Pilkvist has found us.
Vex flew back into the pilot house, attacking the gears and knobs along the wall.
Nayeli!
Unmoored!
Etta! Waterway is clear!
Lou shouted over the chaos.
What do you need me to do?
Nothing.
Vex yanked on a lever, twisted the wheel, and sent the rapid meander heaving away from the dock. Lou toppled backward. Teo clung to the bow, screeching as the boat glided for the open waters of Lake Regolith. But through the roar of the rapid meander's engine came a sharp burst of sound that Lou knew by heart. Gunfire. Lou clawed her way across the deck and pulled Teo down. He dropped onto his backside.
Lou! Raiders are chasing us! We're on Devereaux Bell's boat, and we're raiders now, too!
Lou ignored him to look over the railing. The rapid meander sailed across the narrow expanse of water between their dock and the next one. Through the gaps between the moored boats, Lou saw men running up the dock, barely keeping pace as Vex punched the boat faster. Their appearance marked them as raiders, tattered clothes, weapons across their waists and up their chests, various traits speaking of Mecht affiliation. Blonde hair here, wooden toggles in another's beard, boots made of crocodile skin. One fired a pistol, the shot landing in the wall of a boat. They'd never be able to aim with the steamboats in the way, but once the rapid meander cleared the docks, it would be open for the few moments it stayed within firing range. Lou scrambled in her satchel. Sweet Pete. Narcodium creeper. Ah, finally. Sometimes Grace Loray's botanical magics worked well as they were. In this case, an unaltered variegated holly leaf would be fine. Lou bent onto her knees. Teo hunched next to her, suppressing giggles into his palm. The part of Lou that had spent her childhood doing this, fighting to survive, not just live, had propelled her to this precipice, where she was holding a deadly botanical plant and staring at her friend's brother. In that moment, she saw herself, younger, staring up at her father with an innocence she had lost because of situations like this. She saw herself holding a pistol, and she could still hear the echo of the blast, see the spark that had punched light into the shadows of the jungle, even though her father had sworn it would be dark.
That tree, Lulubeen, there,
Tom had told her.
Wait for movement. I'll force him out. This isn't on your shoulders, you hear me? Fire at the first movement. You won't see a thing, I promise.
Lou froze now.
The only thing she could move was her eyes, which she lifted as the boat sped on until they barreled into open water. The mech raiders stumbled to the end of the dock. Cold sweat beaded across Lou's forehead. The leaf in her hand weighed more than she could bear, and her fist sank to the deck.
I'm doing to Teo what my father did to me. I don't regret that life. It helped the war. But
her heart broke.
I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Something thumped behind her. Lou whipped around to see Nayeli on a stack of crates, holding a fistful of plants.
Everyone, remain calm, she announced. I'm about to blow some shit up.
Nay, Vex shouted from the pilot house. We've a kid here now, all right?
Sorry. I'm about to chaotically rearrange some shit up.
That wasn't the problem,
Vex started to say at the same moment Lou cried, Don't! But Nayeli waved her hand by her ear.
Can't hear you. Explosion's too loud.
She reared back and let a bundle fly. It smashed onto the dock, but all that came was a series of pops and sparks that caught the raider's clothes. Hemlite. Relatively harmless, not lethal, it leaped to life in flashes of orange that kept the raiders well occupied as the rapid meander flew beyond reach. Up the harbor, a council boat approached, the sigil of Grace Larrae rippling beside the smokestack. It was no doubt forming the blockade Etta had mentioned, the one full of ships searching for Vex. But he and his crew would be far enough away by the time it reached these docks. The rapid meander blew by other boats. One cluster looked, at first glance, to be another council patrol. The largest vessel in the group of six flew Grace Larrae's flag. But before Lou shouted for Vex to avoid them, she realized it was an extraction group. One council boat keeping watch, as the half-dozen civilian craft anchored around it sent divers into the lake to mine magic plants. Bubbles pocked the surface of the lake, marking diving bells far below. Even so, Vex steered the meander away from the group. 12 or more Grace Larrae Marines often manned patrol boats, making sure law-abiding citizens accounted for every plant taken from the lake or riverbeds. But no one gave the meander a glance, and Vex pushed the boat faster, taking them east, away from New Deza. Lou melted to her knees, calming enough to go over her mistake. Why hadn't she thought of Hemlite? Why had she gone for a plant that would kill the raiders? Was that truly her instinct again, after all these years? No, she told herself. She hadn't reached for a lethal plant when confronted with Brandon at the castle's gate. She could find Milo without losing herself. Lou shook it off and stood, leaving Teo to stare at the water in fascination as she walked up to the pilot house's window. Through it, she fixed Vex with a stare. What next, Raider? Vex could feel Etta glaring at him from behind. Lou glared at him ahead. Off to the side of the deck, Nayeli folded her arms, waiting, though not glaring, yet. Lou wanted him to use his resources to find the missing Argridian. Only one thing came to mind, one group who had access to the single best tool on the island for locating people. But going to them for help would really, really piss off Nayeli. Vex cleared his throat.
Introductions, he said instead.
Nayeli's our resident diver and detonations specialist. If you need anything retrieved or blown up, she's your girl.
Nayeli beamed and winked at Lou.
And Etta, Vex motioned over his shoulder. Our muscle and engine expert.
Etta scowled.
You haven't said who she is.
Vex studied Lou for a beat, thinking.
She's an investor.
Lou blinked, probably surprised he hadn't said something unsavory.
I'm Ada Luna, she added. Lou, I've hired your captain to find Milo Ibarra, a missing Argridian general.
Etta's brows rose. Her eyes slid to Teo, bent double over the bow, screaming,
A shark! A shark! I saw a shark!
There were no sharks in Lake Regolith. Etta's emotions sputtered into sympathy.
Ibarra, your husband?
Lou gagged.
No, he's...
Vex handed the wheel over to Etta,
but he paused halfway to the hatch. Sure, Ibarra was an Argridian diplomat, but Lu's revulsion seemed... personal? He waited, but she froze as if she either couldn't figure out the next words or couldn't force them out of her mouth. Etta shrugged.
Keep your secrets, but know that if you endanger this crew, I'll throw you overboard.
Teo whipped back from the railing.
No, you won't, he declared. I won't let you.
A grin stretched Etta's lips. Vex teetered back a full step. Etta only ever smiled after a satisfying brawl, and that smile wasn't this smile, soft and nearly sweet.
Etta, you all right?
Vex asked. Etta's smile vanished.
Brave kid,
she said and focused on the horizon. Vex chuckled. The hatch door banged into the deck with a thud, and he dropped down the ladder without a word. A quick scuffle above decks, and Teo came hurtling through the hatch. Vex scrambled to catch him, and the squirming kid landed a stray kick to his temple.
Ow!
Vex plunked Teo to the floor and rubbed his head. His vision blurred for a second. Damn. With his strength, the kid would make a good raider.
Sorry!
Lu climbed down the ladder with more grace. She dropped beside him and took note of Teo first, then their surroundings. The hall was so narrow, Vex could touch both walls with his elbows. Two of the three doors were open, showing bunks in each. The space was dark and cramped and smelled of fire, either Nyeli's fault or the engine. But God, there was no better place in the world.
My bunk room, he said, motioning at it. Nyeli and Etta's bunk room. Privy's in their room. Through here we have...
Vex kicked into the last door, a thick iron barrier meant to withstand the engine's heat.
Engine room.
He ducked inside. He'd spent the better part of 2 years on this boat, but the warmth of the well-fed engine slapped him upside the head. Lu followed and staggered back, gasping. He gave her an apologetic shrug. Against the right wall, a pile of coal sat in a bin, while the furnace glowed orange in the opposite wall. A cot was tucked up in the corner where Etta slept during long night trips. That gave Vex an idea. Oh, Lu would hate this. But he wasn't sure he'd forgiven her for the, this bomb might heal you or it might be poisonous, have a good day now.
Coal furnace,
Vex pointed out the things as he said them.
Coal goes into furnace, boat functions.
What? Lu asked. Vex pointed again.
Coal. Furnace.
Why do you... Realization hit Lu.
No, I am not shoveling fuel for your boat while...
While what, princessa?
Vex propped his arm on the open door, its short height letting him bend close to her. The heat of the engine room brought out sweat on his brow, and he saw it on Lu, too. Beads of condensation rolling down her face.
We aren't a quarter of the way across Lake Regolith. I doubt Pilkvist will leave his territory, and I'm guessing the Council is still searching New Deeza. But the more space we put between your pursuers and us, the better.
Lu winced. Didn't tremble or shudder or anything that showed weakness. No doubt she'd stirred up considerable chaos when she'd freed him. They aren't after me, she said, regaining herself. And that's your plan? Sail us into Lake Regolith, and then what? I hired you for a purpose, and I expect you to deliver, raider. She glanced back at Teo, who was busying himself by singing some soft, mildly depressing song and seeing if he could hop from the doorway of one bunk room to the other. Lu leaned closer to Vex, which shocked him enough that he almost missed her question. You're Argridian, she whispered. Is that how you will find Milo? Do you have connections?
Let's not delve into that particular detail yet. No, Princessa. I'm going to use other means. Ever met Kansu Darzi?
Lu shook her head.
Good, she's a pain in the ass. But she's the head of the Tunkian Syndicate in Port Mezitib, and they have a certain magic that might help us find Ibarra.
There's no botanical plant that can serve as a tracker.
Not a tracker. It's... Well, it's complicated. Trust me, I may be a raider.
He said it with exaggerated disgust.
but I adhere to a certain standard of integrity. Since you broke me out of jail, I'm guessing you don't have anything to contribute to this search, so be useful.
He waved at the furnace again, and when Lou looked at it, Vex shot out into the hall. He got halfway to the ladder when he noticed Teo behind him, walking in a jolting, awkward way. Vex blinked. Was the kid trying to mimic his walk? If so, did he really walk that weirdly? He looked back. Lou stepped out of the engine room, already frowning.
Come on, kid, Vex said. You know how to navigate?
No, Teo chirped.
Never too early to learn.
Vex hefted Teo up and attached him to the top few rungs of the ladder to avoid frantic scrambling. Teo climbed to the deck as Lou shot forward.
Stop! Teo! I'm not leaving you alone with a raider!
Vex snapped a hurt look at her.
You think I'm a bad influence?
Yes!
Says the woman who broke a wanted criminal out of the castle.
I wouldn't have done that had there been another choice, Lou replied. But you have chosen every horrible act you've committed. Do you feel anything beyond selfishness at this point?
Lou's eyes went wide, telling Vex she felt she'd crossed a line. He forced a callous smile.
Of course not, Princessa, he said. I'm a cold-blooded, good-for-nothing outlaw. Now, coal, furnace.
He hopped up the ladder and slammed the hatch on Lou. 13. Ben sat beside his father's throne, as still as the statues of the Graces guarding the room in their ornate alcoves, candles and offerings spread at their marble feet. The receiving room in the palace was a mess of people. Dukes and duquesas, condes and condessas, aristocrats from the highest reaches of society as well as those who barely had any property to their name. But the fire yesterday had ignited a passion in everyone, which didn't fit the somber browns and deep blues that coated the walls. As Ben stared out at the crowd, a slow, dull ache spread through his shoulders. If he didn't move, perhaps people wouldn't say what he feared they would. Defensors flanked the dais. Yakis stood behind Ben's chair, and Ben found himself wanting to look back at him for reassurance. Eleazar leaned forward on the throne, telling those who crowded around the dais that he would listen. They all started talking at once.
The prince was attacked. Who is safe?
But the church condemned the university. It should have burned long ago.
We must be pure.
That cry came from Manxas, dressed in the deep purple habits of nuns from Deza's Grace Isaura convent. Women joined the convent to proselytize for Grace Isaura's sainted pillar, honesty.
The fire is a sign from the pious god that we must continue our purification from magic. We must abandon the treaty with Grace Loray and seek to cleanse them and ourselves.
Eleazar lifted his hands for silence. One swung close to Ben, and he shut his eyes, expecting an impact. All that came was Eleazar's voice.
I hear your concerns, he said.
Security measures are being undertaken to ensure protection to those of virtue. If you follow the pious god's teachings, you have nothing to fear. I will address more at the service tonight, where we will honor the holy lives lost in the fire.
Ben cut his father a look. Which lives was Eleazar talking about? The 11 protesters who had started the fire under the guise of the pious god's will, or the 4 defensors who had tried to stop them to protect the prince? Ben remembered voices chanting that name, Principe Herexe, as the crowd looked up at him with fear and hatred.
I can assure you that the agents I have sent to oversee the Grace Loray Treaty are of the strongest caliber,
Eleazar continued.
Many of you know General Ibarra from his staunch leadership during the war. I select only the most unyielding souls to do the pious god's bidding.
Ben's heart thundered. Every word from his father sounded like it would be followed by, and my son has proven himself impure
Tonight we will watch him burn. It was a trap, he knew. He'd known. But he hadn't stopped. He could have, at any point, to save himself what was happening now. But he'd kept working with magic. Why? When a Condessa stepped forward, Ben swore he could feel a pyre building around him.
My king, I must cleanse myself of a burden, the Condessa said, sinking into a curtsy.
She whipped toward the crowd and pointed.
The Duke of Apollinar has admitted to sympathizing with those corrupted by magic. For our own safety, the church must cleanse him.
The people closest to the unfortunate Duke pulled away. The boy, younger than Ben, put his hands out, horror on his face.
I did not, he cried.
I serve the pious god. I am pure.
The Condessa spun back to Eleazar.
My king, I beg you to purify our ranks.
The room met her accusation with enthusiasm. People shoved others forward.
Here is a heretic. I saw this woman tending a garden. There could be evil plants growing on her estate.
The room was a building storm. Ben wasn't shocked. He felt, watching them, the answer to his question, why had he kept working in magic? Why would he continue? Because of this. The way Eleazar held out his hands and assured everyone that the church would deal with each accused, as was custom now. Ben looked up at Yakis, whose face showed the same horror.
Steady, my prince,
Yakis whispered.
Steady?
Ben's voice shook.
This is unbelievable.
Yakis dared put a hand on Ben's shoulder.
I cannot believe everyone accused is truly impure. Likely most will repent. Your aristocracy is not this compromised.
Ben's jaw dropped open. He closed it and shifted forward. That had not been what he'd meant. It was not unbelievable that so many people could throw themselves into these accusations. It was unbelievable that they were taken seriously. Defensors intervened to lead away the accused, gently, as they were still nobles, but no title excluded a soul from corruption.
It is a great sacrifice to bring up the impurities of one's neighbor,
Eleazar said.
The pious god rewards those who stay loyal to him when the way is difficult. Conflict festers in corrupt hearts. They want to be cleansed, even as they sin. In handing over your neighbors, you are servicing both the pious god and their souls. What of Prince Benyat? A priest asked. His soul is in question.
The room went quiet. Ben's heart beat so fast it purred in his ears. Yakis moved closer. Ben forced himself to ask, would Yakis leap to protect him from the accusations, or be the one to lead him to Grace Neo's cathedral? Yakis would never think that Ben might fail to repent. That was the divide between them. No matter how tightly Ben held Yakis at night, that Yakis believed in this, in purity, in righteousness. And Ben was what the crowd feared him to be. Terror ate up his senses until there was only Eleazar, saying,
I will deal with Benyat.
The priest wasn't convinced.
My king, if you would, I am the Eminence,
Eleazar said, his declaration echoing over the room. If it had been quiet before, it was like death now, everyone remembering to whom they were airing their grievances.
You are lambs in my fold. You have neither the fortitude nor the capacity to understand the decisions your shepherd makes. Do not question me further.
The priest bowed.
Eminence, you are holy and true.
Eleazar dismissed him, dismissed the room, by standing and turning his back on the crowd. The defensors resumed picking through the lot, trying to find the accused, but it would be madness. It was madness, this waste of fear. Ben didn't stand.
Eleazar walked past him, making for the door behind the dais, when Ben, in a soft voice, asked,
Are you trying to kill me?
Eleazar stopped. Yakis heard, too, and Ben sat between them, numb. Eleazar looked down at Ben. His gaze was heavy.
As I said, Benyat, the sheep cannot understand the shepherd's decisions. Argrid does not do well with sudden change.
He paused.
But no, I do not think you will give me a reason to kill you.
Ben nodded, a weight grinding on his heart. His father had gone from believing some magic was tolerable under the Inquisitors to overseeing dozens of burnings a week for people who had magic to tasking Ben with healing their country through magic now. What was true? What was lasting? Ben had been playing this game for years, and he was tired of the rules changing. Tired of his father shifting beliefs on a whim. There was one thing Ben knew. He was done having his beliefs chosen for him. The sun licked the horizon when Ben's carriage deposited him outside Grace Neos Cathedral. Citizens from every rank in Deza made a solemn procession into the cathedral, hands pressed together in supplication to the pious god. Ahead, Eleazar stepped out of his own carriage. Ben couldn't deny the toll this had taken on his father. Eleazar's countenance mimicked the bent shoulders and drawn faces of the crowd. The inside of the cathedral complemented the exterior in grandeur. The ceiling lifted as tall as the building, lacework arches holding stained glass so the setting sun shot through in oranges and pinks and blues. Hundreds of pews were already filled, but defensors led Eleazar and Ben up the aisle to the row of honor before the altar. Eleazar left to begin his duties as eminence, while Ben took his seat. Around the altar, statues depicting every grace stared at him. Grace Neus, who had built this cathedral. Grace Loray, Grace Isara, Grace Araceli, Grace Biel, and dozens more anointed men and women who, through their selfless, uncorrupted acts, had made the world a holier place. They were everywhere. In Eleazar's office, in the throne room, in the cathedrals. Beacons of the church, always watching with empty eyes that judged Ben as intensely as the people taking their seats behind him. He looked at Yakis, under the mezzanine where guards could watch the service as well as their charges. Yakis nodded once, encouraging. A door next to the altar opened and monksies came out, carrying tapers. They lit candles beneath each grace statue, chanting for the pious god to pass the strength he had given these select servants on to everyone in Argrid. When the candles were lit, the monksies took seats at the rear of the altar, hands folded against their black robes. Eleazar emerged in the vestments of the eminence, cords around his neck, woven with colors representing every grace, a tall ivory hat in the shape of the beseeching V, a scarlet and gold robe that pooled around Eleazar's feet like ornamented blood. Ben's knee started to bounce. Eleazar stood at the head of the altar.
Brothers, sisters, he began,
his words catching on the walls, a design that made the building resonate.
It is in the wake of tragedy that we hold today's service. Flames that started out of fear burned 15 souls. Fear is a tool of the pious God. It is his way for us to distinguish between pure and impure acts. I beseech the pious God's children to listen to the apprehension in their hearts. Fear will save you from falling into a path that condemns your soul.
Eleazar waved for the monksies to press on with the service. Ben sat, paralyzed, while the cathedral filled with murmurs. His father hadn't condemned the burning. In fact, what he'd said felt as explosive as if he'd told the fanatics to carry on with their dangerous beliefs. Eleazar could have been easing the transition. Such prejudices would not change in a day, as he'd told Ben. But they wouldn't change at all like this. Ben looked up at the grace statues and stood. Eleazar watched his son with narrow eyes, conversations halted, the silence rippling out from Ben as though he were a stone plunked into a pool. His next actions would define who he was. Would he be poor Prince Benyat, the shameful, weak man, or the pupil of the High Inquisitor, his uncle, a heretic? He already knew.
Eminence, Ben offered.
He faced the crowd, steeling himself when he realized how many people were in here.
Fellow Argridians, I do not intend to contradict the Eminence, our merciful teacher of the pious God, but the burning of the university was a tragedy that the church should respond to with outrage. Benyat,
Eleazar said, a warning, but he didn't make a further move to stop him.
Innocent people lost their lives because of a prejudice that the church should, in its wisdom, condemn. The things I do with the blessing of the Eminence himself. Our current state of suffering is not punishment from the pious God. It is due to our own ignorance and fear.
Ben faced Eleazar. Dread clawed at him, but he kept speaking.
I ask you, Eminence, to condemn the burning and to reinstate the Inquisitors. Their banishment has surely atoned for any sins of their leader.
Though he didn't mention Rodrigo and Paxben by name, Ben had to fight to keep his voice from catching.
And you cannot deny that Argrid has need of their wisdom.
Eleazar held his gaze, cold.
Benyat, you disgrace me. You do not yet bear the burden of Eminence, so you do not yet have the luxury of arbitrary questions. Leave until you can be contrite and humbled by your position as an instrument in the pious God's inconceivable plan.
Ben took a stumbling step backward. Eleazar's eyes darkened as the crowd gasped. The Eminence King had told his heir to leave Grace Neus Cathedral. But all Ben heard were words like threatening fingers around his neck. Obey me without question. Do my bidding and be grateful to be valuable. A hand took Ben's arm. Yakis.
Come, my prince, he pleaded.
Ben let Yakis pull him away. Eleazar addressed the crowd, apologizing for the outburst.
Ordained in blood.
Ben remembered his father's words in the crypt.
Ours is a family of tragedy. The pious God ordained us in blood.
14. Vex managed not to tell Nayeli where they were going as they sailed through the night. Teo acted as a yappy buffer, bless him, and stayed up until past dark asking questions and squealing at fish jumping from the water. When Lou came to take him to one of the bunk rooms and asked after their progress, Nayeli was asleep at the bow. But now, with the morning sun stark overhead and the eastern shore of Lake Regolith less than half an hour away, Vex knew it was coming.
We're in the business of fighting Argrid now?
Etta asked from where she and Nayeli were doing inventory of one of their storage areas.
I thought we were avoiding them until we could get enough money to hole up away from fighting anyone or getting caught up in other people's problems.
I don't know.
Vex rubbed his face, straightening his eye patch by reflex.
The general was abducted, but Lou doesn't think it was real. And honestly, I don't either. Argrid's up to something. They've wanted more and more plants from us, and now one of their highest-ranking generals ups and vanishes. Don't tell me that's not suspect.
We're still retiring in Port Fausta, right? Nayeli pleaded.
Port Fausta? Last week you wanted to refurbish one of those old dormant volcanic tunnels in the northern mountains.
Too much work. Besides, Port Faust is where the good alcohol is. I swear on all four gods if I'm not neck deep in a tub of wine in a few months because you've decided to go heroic.
Lou's paying. Magic concoctions, Vex assured her. You should see what she can do with plants. We'll be swimming in Gaia's. Enough to retire early.
Nayeli lit up. Where are we going? Where do you think he went? We gonna hunt down the Argridian bullies who keep coming after us and see if they know anything?
Vex fought to keep from wincing. Or locking the pilot.